The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
There is a genuine tug of war happening in the AFL world. Inside the Melbourne camp, all Demons fans are trying to keep the lid on. Outside of it, everyone's trying to take the lid off. We're going to see where the Demons stand right here, right now, after round 10. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth, and joined by the regular team, as always. I'm not quite sure which side of the ledger Tom Morris, Peter Senior himself, is sitting on. Are you trying to keep the lid on, or is it being lifted off? He's got the beanie on.
Oh my gosh. Wonderful podcasting.
He's got the beanie on.
Hello, Ben. Hello, Max. It's great to be here, and I couldn't be happier with the week's form. I've been a closet Melbourne supporter for the best part of 12 years, and now I'm out, and I'm enjoying everything that they're putting on the field. A percentage of, what, 207 over the past month?
Sure.
It has been a walk in the park for the D's, and they can win the flag for the first time in my lifetime.
We'll make sure that we'll put this out on social media, Max Lawton. He's got the Demons beanie over the headphones. It's a fashionable look.
I like that they can win the flag for the first time in your lifetime. They made a grand final
lifetime. I was there. They were never going to beat Essendon that year. Essendon were ridiculous.
True.
And they lost by 50 points. And as a juvenile youngster that I was, Max, as I'm sure you can appreciate.
Compared to the juvenile youngster you are now.
I'm sure you can appreciate that. I just assumed that Melbourne would continue to make grand finals from there on in. It hasn't really happened. In fact, it's been the opposite. It's been a debacle for years.
Yes.
But the D's are playing some. It was Harlem Globetrotters
trying
to start the first
really
20
was.
Minutes. Adelaide were witches' hats. It was like playing against an under 14 team. Unbelievable to watch. Beautiful to watch.
Yep.
I started singing ole, 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 ole. It was that glorious.
I like that we used Melbourne and camp in the same sentence before without referring to the camp from the preseason.
That might get a mention. Before we get stuck into the Demons and Crows match, because that is very high on the agenda for this Fox Footy podcast, but the match committee big call first up. So any player from any club that should be dropped or picked ahead of round 11 this week, Thomas?
The only player that needs to come into Melbourne's side is Cam Pedersen.
Oh, yeah.
So
You've been on this for quite some time.
Yeah, I think he was a travelling emergency. He didn't play VFL on the weekend, as far as I understand.
Really strong emergencies, by the way.
Oh,
that's a good
Dom
sign.
Dom Tyson.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good sign of how well a club's going when their twos are going really well. It's the opposite to GWS, whose NEFL team is being pillared every single week.
And one on the weekend.
But before then,
Redland.
I think they'd lost five or six on the trot before then.
Yeah, their second win of the season. They're not going well.
Which isn't well. Anyway, now, I can't tell you who he comes in for, but at some stage in the next 4 or 5 weeks, they need to find out whether the forward line works better with Pedersen or not. And that can define how they shape up for finals. If you wait until around 2021, it might be too late.
I was going to say, Maxie, do you think it'll work better with Pedersen in there?
It's working pretty well right now.
Tim Smith had 19 touches and kicked two goals on the weekend. I think before the weekend I would have said, yes, we need Cam Pedersen. Melbourne needs Cam Pedersen. But with Tom McDonald and Jesse Hogan playing so well, I'm not sure it does anymore. But I want to see it. I think the D's coaching staff and selection panel need to see it and then make a judgment for later in the year.
I feel like we're back on the official Melbourne Club podcast.
It does feel a little bit like that.
Too soon, I think,
for that. Yeah,
Max,
you know, your match committee big call?
Fremantle needs to continue playing the kids.
Thank you, Sandy.
So Ross Lyon talked about in his post-match press conference how they want to just keep playing kids. For some reason, Daniel Pearce continues to play for them for seemingly no reason.
Yes. He was a Norwich rising star, wasn't he?
Yes, Norwich being the emphasised word.
In about 06, go on.
And I would like to see Stefan Giro come into the side.
Yes.
I think he was very much a contender last week, one of the emergencies, but Ross suggesting he was a little bit sore, but then played really well on the waffle, had 30-plus disposals, so get him in there. Glenn Luff will be very happy to see that. He's a stats darling.
He
had some really good a really good time in the JLT, was it?
Yeah, JLT. But even last year, he was South Australia's best ball magnet in the under-18s last year. You can't miss him. He's got a terrible haircut, long, blonde, flowing locks. Plus,
he's only small.
And
he's
175 centimetres. Yeah, very small
71
as well.
kgs.
But if he can find the footy and use it well, you're in with a good chance. That's the thing. The knock on Giro has been his ball use in the past, but he can certainly find it. There's no doubt about that. And he's fit. He was right up there in terms of state combine testing.
What I like about him is that he had 25 kicks on the weekend. So he's actually using the ball and gaining metres, averaging 25 disposals this year in the waffle. It's rare I agree with you, Max. I think they need to give him a go. They need to play the kids. I don't know what Ross Lyon's doing playing all these old fellas. Well, too many of them.
He's been getting better at it. Like, round two, they made that big sort of change, I believe it was, and they've been gradually getting there, but just
do it
more.
But they had five 30-plus-year-olds on the weekend, which is a bit strange.
Maybe three's okay. Do you know Melbourne was the fifth youngest team on the weekend?
Yes, I did see a tweet there,
Fifth youngest team, and they won by 91 points against a team that is broadly expected to be around the mark for the top four at the end of the year.
Before we let you loose on the Demons, let's go to the award-winning or future award-winning power rankings, foxfooty.com.
I'm interested in this.
What award are they winning?
We'll make up a category.
Norris Rising Star.
Most numerical.
Who is some of the sort of the surprise packets of the power rankings?
So Melbourne, it's in fact up in third now in the power rankings.
Not first.
No, I don't think
ahead of ourselves.
Tom only had one vote.
Actually had them third, I think. You can still win the flag from third, though, so it's not the end of the world. It's not like the Premier League.
Richmond did it last year.
Win it from 6th or 7th, it turns out. So I think the top three seems to have established itself as West Coast, Richmond, Melbourne. That's the general consensus.
In that order?
In that order on the power rankings, certainly. Yeah. I think Richmond probably deserves to be flag favourite because the grand final is played at the MCG, if you haven't heard.
Mm. And they're still playing very good football, albeit maybe having a slight lull on the weekend against St Kilda.
Having two on the bench for the entire game didn't help.
But they're getting the job done.
Yeah. There's no four-quarter efforts going around probably about the Tigers in recent weeks, I think, but you're right. They're doing enough at the moment, and they're banking wins, most importantly.
North Melbourne up into fifth after beating Fremantle over there.
Highest of the year so far?
Yes, I believe. Highest they've probably been since their glory years of going 9-0 a couple of
since
years.
Anthony Stevens and Wayne Carey were in the same team.
Not quite. Not that far back, but sure.
Oh, okay, is that too soon?
So, do we think North's... I mean, we've been saying it for a while. Do we think North's for real? What does real mean when it comes to North Melbourne? Could they make the top four?
So I
know that sounds insane.
So we should probably have a bit of a look at North Melbourne's draw, because when you have a look at North Melbourne's draw, they're in a pretty darn good position, I think, at this stage. I think they're actually quite a complete side when everyone's fit, and they've had a pretty good run with injuries so far. But they're a pretty complete side in terms of their spine. I think their age profile's pretty good. They've got a really
They've
got a really good mix of sort of late 20-year-olds with young kids who are, I think, really bought into the Brad Scott game plan. And, you know, Robert Walls praised Brad Scott last night for sticking with those values and beliefs that he had at the end of 2016 when he cut those four veterans famously, and then Andrew Swallow and Lindsay Thomas left at the end of last year.
Is that proven correct, or is it too soon to say that?
It probably is too soon, Thomas, the buzzword of the podcast so far. But all things are looking, you know, we're in round 10 now, and if you're North Melbourne sitting pretty high up on the ladder, it's going to take a pretty disastrous, albeit 2016 like fall from grace when they were 9-0.
Well, so that was built off a really easy schedule and some very close wins. Their percentage was showing the truth there. They were not the best team in the comp, and that played out as they finished 8th and lost to Adelaide in that final.
But they've got the 4th best percentage, I think, in the comp?
Yes, 120. So that's a legit percentage. Yeah. And to me, they seem real. The defence, I believe they're allowing 5 goals less a game than last year, which is extraordinary. I think the one thing I thought about North Melbourne was that, well, they can score at least, but who are they going to stop? Majak Dawes become a great defender. He's been really valuable, and they didn't have him against Fremantle. He was rested for that game. So that's a really good sign for them as well. What do you reckon, Thomas?
Yeah, I just love Ben Brown up forward. I love the way he kicks straight. There's a lot made of the fact he has 100 shots a training session, which is one thing, but he's actually a really skillful player around the ground. He hits targets around he picks the ball up below his knees.
Yep.
Their ability to win on the road. I picked North Melbourne, I think, to come 16th or 17th at the start of the year. I think a lot of people would have been in that bracket. But if there's a sort of a blueprint for making the top eight after a previous year, and Richmond is probably a classic example of this for 2017, you finish in the bottom six, you get a slightly easier draw, and then you play against teams that you otherwise wouldn't have twice. Now, North Melbourne last year were no good. They finished 15th, I think, I've got here.
Yes.
Yep. So their draw is clearly easier. But disregarding that, I think it wouldn't matter if it was an even draw. They're in the best eight teams in the comp right now.
Yep.
They're playing very good footy, and Brad Scott deserves a lot of credit. Quick one for you, Max. Brad Scott or Adam Simpson, who's the coach of the year to date?
Adam Simpson, because they're a premiership team, and I thought they were going to be bottom six.
But we're talking about North Melbourne being a potential top four team when they were bottom two.
I didn't think either team was going to be bottom four. I thought both were going to be around the same mark.
Okay.
So North Melbourne's run home, so they've got 12 games to come.
Do we want to do the thing we did last week? Where
I don't quite have them in a row here, but okay. Six of them are against bottom six sides, including Brisbane twice and the Bulldogs twice for North Melbourne.
That's very nice.
And then the rest of the six games are against top 12 teams. One of them is Essendon, who currently sit 12th.
Yep.
Adelaide, Collingwood, Sydney, and Geelong and West Coast as well. So at the moment, you could probably bank six games.
You can get them to 12. I think you can get them to 12. That's the key.
It's incredible. And hats off to the club. They've done everything right. And there was a lot of knockers, wasn't there? No one wanted to go there. They didn't get Josh Kelly. They missed out on Dustin Martin. I think they're looking like quite an attractive destination club at this point. If you're a mid to high ranked player, I wouldn't mind going to North. I wouldn't be saying to Tom Lynch, go to North Melbourne. But if you're the level below that, this is how Melbourne started, remember? They didn't get the superstars, but they got the players just below that. And there's reaping the rewards.
So where does, I know we might talk about it a bit later, but where does Andrew Gaff sit in that?
I don't think he goes to North Melbourne. I think St Kilda will offer him the most.
Yeah.
I think Melbourne, if he chooses to leave, will he be his preferred destination. And it makes sense that they would be, given that he went for the D's as a kid and their list profile and where they're at as a club. Yeah. But it all depends on whether he wants to leave West Coast or not.
I don't necessarily agree with the idea of North being a promising sign for the future.
I think
we might have mentioned this in previous podcasts, but in a way, this is a very bad thing for their rebuild this season. Because we talked about their age. All their best players are those 28-plus sort of players. Yep. Not a lot of young Ben Brown.
Ben Brown's 25.
Exactly, apart from Ben Brown.
And Jack Zeeble.
So,
and Ben Cunnington.
Around that mark.
Yeah. I agree with you that
if they're trying to rebuild, this is not the way to rebuild. This is the way to succeed, and this is great, and we can be happy for them and all of that stuff, but they're not bringing in that young talent by this season, except for Tarrant Thomas.
I don't think North Melbourne can afford to go right down the bottom and be at the bottom for 2 or 3 years as a club. That's why they're probably trying to renovate on the run more than maybe a Carlton would.
Okay. Always enjoy that terminology, renovating on the run. Thomas, I know it's one of your favourites.
Renovating on the run.
Ross
the Boss favourite. Yeah. Where does the two New South Wales-based teams sit on the power rankings this week, Matthew?
So Sydney's sort of just hanging around there in fourth. I think, again, it's just that respect thing. They did look very good against Fremantle a couple of weeks ago. GWS all the way down in 12th.
Yeah. Which is they're a laughing stock, the Giants, at the moment.
Laughing stock, Thomas.
They are. They have fallen off the perch, and they won't play finals now. And
really?
Everyone at that club deserves to be under the pump. And they're going to find it harder to retain players. They're going to find it harder to attract players. Their coach is under pressure. Alistair Clarkson's having coffees in Prahran with the AFL CEO with rumours that he's going to be sounded out by the Giants. Not saying that's going to happen.
Mm.
But the Giants were built up as a premiership team. And they have failed spectacularly because they weren't able to win either of those two prelim finals.
So there's a couple of issues that I'm keen to explore. One of them is just what it's looking like on the field at the moment. And the common
injuries.
Look, yeah, that is a big factor. But yeah. David King said yesterday that this is not a injury-based problem for the Giants. It's an effort-based problem.
Spot on.
And when the tide is against the Giants, no matter which team is out in the park, they like swimming with a tie, but against it, they really struggle.
They drown.
And defensively, they were bullied by Essendon on the weekend. Dyson Heppel was awesome, and Zach Merritt, very, very good. But the Giants have a better midfield than Essendon's and should have put up more of a fight.
Look who they've given up from the club that they would love right now. Wouldn't they love Devon Smith? But they were using him on a forward flank and a forward pocket, and he's gone to Essendon, and he's probably leading their best and fairest.
Yep.
They've given up. I know Tom Bugg's playing VFL for Melbourne, but Tom Bugg is still quite a good player. They've given up a number of these Treloar wasn't, but a number of these players that have affected their depth. They've got injuries now, and now they're in a world of hurt. The injuries, Max, where would they be without the injuries? I still contend that given the effort, they wouldn't be any higher than 7th or 8th at the moment.
You're getting back Toby Green. You're getting back Josh Kelly.
Toby Green's a big loss, yeah. They had Kelly on the weekend.
They did, but I think they would be in a much better position. They might only be 5th or 6th, but they'd be in that pack that's around 6 and 4, not being 4, 5 and 1 with the draw. I think they're still a finals team for a real chance of being a finals team still. Like they just have the talent.
Yeah, I smell a rat at the Giants. All's not well there. All is not well.
I agree, but they're in there.
So if you have a look at the injury ladder, Adelaide have clearly been hit the worst so far. So this is prior to round 10. Adelaide had lost 66 games due to injury to their best 22. The Giants had lost 42. So that was ranked 8th in the competition. So they're missing, a fair chunk of their best 22. But when you compare it to the rest of the competition, They actually don't stand out.
But I think that's been focused on some of their better players, though.
Yeah.
That whereas
so
some
it's
of those,
towards the top end.
Yes, yeah. I think so. That's a bad 42 compared to other teams.
And it's injuries aren't just bad luck. We've seen with Adelaide,
There
is some luck, but there's some poor management involved as well. And I've got no doubt the Giants probably haven't managed injuries as well as they would have liked. Certainly that's the word around the AFL industry, that potentially their staff haven't been as adept at managing injuries. Now, I think Brett Deledio, they've done well to get him back out of the park, but now he's out for 8 to 10 weeks with a calf.
Yeah.
And there's question marks around his entire career.
And that one's not luck as well. That's targeting players with an injury history. You can learn a lot from what a player used to be. Remember when Geelong was willing to almost give up anything for Deledio a couple of years ago when he went to GWS?
Yeah.
And they avoided that bullet.
But
he was
a very durable player for a long period of time, Deledio, but in his last year at Richmond, I'm not sure how many games he played, but he really struggled with injury.
Yeah.
And that's a pattern. At that age, it's very rare that you play more games every year. You're only going to get worse.
Well, a team that is certainly not struggling with injuries at the moment is the Melbourne Demons, Thomas.
Yes, that's right. And no, they've done well with injuries, haven't they?
We're allowed to let Always you loose helps. Momentarily here to talk about Sunday's game, which was clinical. Has
Harlem
to be
Globetrotters,
it was. But I think this was the game that we pigeonholed to say, this is where the Demons can finally make a statement. And they made a statement from the first 5 minutes of the game where they kicked the first four or five goals.
Yeah, we know it was against a half-baked Adelaide team. They're missing a lot of players. And that has to be taken into account. But not to the tune of 91 points.
No, of course not.
If Melbourne won by 40 points or 35 points, you'd probably say, well, that's okay. That's probably what we expect given the players that were out. But they demolished Adelaide.
They
and there were still some very good players in Adelaide in a neutral venue, mind you. So both teams had to travel. The thing that excites me most about Melbourne, and this is from a neutral perspective, watching them play, they actually flicked the ball around, in my mind, like a premiership team would.
Their ball movement's awesome.
Oh, they move it and their handballs are accurate and they go bang, bang, bang. And it feels like they've got 25 players on the field against 18. And I remember watching the Richmond at their best last year when they won the ball. There were just tiger jumpers everywhere. And for the last 5 weeks, that's been the case for Melbourne. The other thing that impresses me is have a look through their list. All their players that were okay or 4 or 5 or 6 out of 10 at the start of the year have lifted.
Yep.
Every single one.
Yep.
They've had market improvement from bulk players, and I've got no doubt that comes about as well, because if you're standing next to a player that's improving, then you improve. They all make each other better. Jake Melksham is the poster boy for this.
Really,
there's probably
is.
Another dozen that have lifted, and Jesse Hogan, it's no longer about Jesse Hogan. He's playing his role and playing it better than ever. Max Gawn's their most important player, but they've got 6 or 7 others that could be in contention for All-Australian. It is an exciting time to be a Melbourne Football Club person at the moment.
Look at that.
And the whole Tom McDonald thing has really made the Cam Pettersson question irrelevant in a way, because we were asking for that second tall, but then came McDonald in and really has been arguably the best forward in the comp, along with Jack Darling and Ben Brown this year.
Well, what you need in a key forward these days is a running prowess. And Hogan has it more than you'd think. And Tom McDonald is a very, very good runner. I think he might even be the best runner at the club. So you add those two together, and all of a sudden, you've got really oversized forward flankers as your key forwards, which is what Buddy is. And that's what very good forwards are these days, not the big hulking John Patton types.
They talked about that on the couch last week. I believe it was Jerry Healy called them the new Rewalts.
Yeah.
Both McDonald and Hogan.
Yes.
And what we've seen as well is players like Buddy and some of the... I read a really good article. I can't remember where it was actually on, but it was online somewhere. It was about players that are getting the ball more in that sort of area just outside 50 to 80 metres out. And when you can bomb it in as well, Buddy and Tex Walker are some of the biggest proponents of this, of bombing it from there. You don't have to worry about that next kick inside 50 where you can possibly have a turnover. And if you're getting it in via those kicks and not getting it in accurately, you're wasting it inside 50. So if you can skip one whole leg and get it into goal from there, and you have those runners who can get it to that area, that's a really important factor.
We all hear coaches and AFL punters talk about the contested ball. At the moment, Melbourne's contested ball this year is plus 19.1 per game. That is off the charts.
They've won all 10 games, haven't they?
They haven't lost the contested possession count so far this season. In 2006, West Coast had a contested possession differential of plus 20. They went on to win the flag. In 2016, the Bulldogs really made the contested possession game very, very sexy. That was plus 16.5, and they went on to win the flag as well. The Demons are sitting in between those two clubs at the moment.
There's still bigger tests to come. We know this.
Oh, yes.
They've got to play some good teams, and Queen's Birthday is going to be fantastic.
Huge.
I actually think Collingwood is a good team, and that's a couple of weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
But the contested ball is massive. Clayton Oliver is the best first possession player in the AFL.
Yes.
He gets it and gets it away better than anyone else. And that is an important... And he's so strong in the contest. Clayton Oliver's playing 81% of game time this year. So he's actually fit enough to be a proper AFL midfielder. He's not even 21 yet. He's just one of those. Jack Viney's just come back in the team. There's a lot of positives, but what they need is Gawn to stay fit and Tom McDonald to stay fit.
Yep. You've got a feature coming on Clayton Oliver this week on foxfooty.com.au.
I do, yeah. No, Clayton, it's just reflecting on his draft. So in July of his draft year, he missed out on the Vic Country under 18 team.
Yep.
He was playing TSE Cup. He just started an amazing run of form for them, but he was slightly overweight, and he wasn't really on the radar of high-level AFL clubs. He was probably going to be drafted in the 20s or 30s, but then he just shot up the rankings. Mm. In the end, he was ranked number four by Melbourne. Melbourne bidded for Callum Mills. They missed out on Callum Mills, and they got Oliver with four ahead of Parrish. It was a Parrish versus Oliver debate.
Yeah.
And you look at that now. I think Parrish is going to be a good player, but it's a no-brainer. And ahead of them were Josh Shackey and Jacob Wietering.
Yeah.
So at this stage, I think Clayton Oliver's looking like the best player in that draft.
Yeah, if he did a redraft, he'd probably be pick one.
Yeah, Charlie Kurnow was 12. But just again shows when you get competitive beasts into your club, they can really lift pretty early.
What about the Crows, Maxi? Because that's sort of been lost a little bit in this. We mentioned Adelaide's injury list, and they do have the most amount of games lost when it comes to their best 22. Was Sunday a one-off, in your opinion, or do you think that there's some worrying cracks there at the Crows?
No, I think it was a one-off. I think we talked about their injury list last week, and I joked that it was probably better than Carlton's list, their injury list was. This is just where they are right now with their injuries, and then you come against an opposition in Melbourne who's had four straight weeks of thumping teams when they have an opportunity, when they sniff that blood, that was going to happen. And I think people sort of, we overestimated potentially, like, this is Melbourne's big test. They're against Adelaide, but we're thinking of Adelaide, the minor premiers, the grand finalists, not Adelaide as they are now. So I think this is Adelaide's worst moment for the year.
Yep.
I can't imagine it getting worse than this for them.
I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay.
I don't know if they're going to make the top four, but
they could make fourth.
Yeah, they could, but I wouldn't want to play them in the first week of finals regardless.
No.
I think that they've still got something to offer here.
Absolutely. I think we don't want to write them off. No. Write them off at your peril.
Are we writing off the Bulldogs as well for 2018?
Yes.
Yes.
Another disappointing
14 the week before, and then three behinds in the second half. That was really disappointing. I watched that entire game.
Because their first half was fantastic.
It was. How can they have such a discrepancy between their best and their worst within the one game?
Yeah. Youth.
Do we have to give youth, or do we have to give more credit to Collingwood than what we're offering at the moment?
Yes. I think they probably deserve quite a bit. I think that 4-4 record was such a mirage for the Dogs.
They'd
beaten a bunch of terrible teams and gotten to that point, and they're sitting, oh, they're only a game back of Geelong in third. Maybe they're going to contend. No, the Bulldogs are bad. So they were not going to do that, and I think they've been shown up as the pretenders that they were. And we talked about their list management a couple of weeks ago
Yeah, so what do you make? You mentioned that last week, Maxie. What do you make of the list management calls over the past couple of years?
We need to look deeper into the actual decisions they've made, and I need to look at them on paper to finally make a refined call. But my view is that your premiers in 2016, how do you get here? There has to be decisions made where you go down this far.
Particularly when they had such a young premiership side as well.
It's Hawthorn went down after the 08 flag a little bit. But then they came back up, and then they had the dynasty. It doesn't look like the Bulldogs are going to do that in the next few years. They've still got those really talented players, McRae's, Bontempelli's, etc. But they've had so many bizarre decisions. Like, their forward situation has been terrible for 12 months plus. Josh Shackey coming in, he's finally getting a game. I have big questions over that as well.
Two words for you, Benny and Max. Bob Murphy. Him not being at the club has meant their football department, players and coaches are now devoid of that senior leader that is completely respected by everyone within the four walls.
Mm-hmm. So this is on field and off field.
Yeah, he was the middleman between Luke Beveridge, who can be a very harsh and uncompromising coach, and a playing group which, as you said, is in many ways young and immature and maybe not used to the success they've been given early in their careers. Without Bob Murphy, that's fallen on Easton Wood's shoulders, who I think is a terrific leader, but he's not Bob Murphy.
Yeah.
I think losing Murphy, just like St Kilda losing Riewoldt, is intangibly significant.
But also losing Matthew Boyd as well last year.
Yeah.
And Dale Morris hasn't played a game this season. They're their three veterans that were...
I don't think it's an excuse. Yeah. And I think they've still got a lot of premiership players on their list. They're choosing not to play. But when you compare them to Melbourne, look at all the players that have improved. they've had a significant number of players, the Bulldogs, that have regressed over the last 18 months, and that's a real worry for their coaches and their supporters.
So the likes, so I'm thinking if we look ahead towards the trade period, someone like a Mitch Wallace or Josh Dunkley, will clubs be frothing to try and get those kind of players?
Yeah, I think Carlton should throw everything at Mitch Wallace.
Makes complete sense.
Yeah. I think Carlton, it's exactly what Carlton need. Yeah. The age bracket, the sort of player he is, he's a proven performer. I think Carlton would be stupid not to throw everything at Mitch Wallace.
Yeah, right.
And there's also Josh Dunkley, and we've spoken about Luke Dalhouse before. There are players out of contract at this club that would be really valuable to others, and the Bulldogs might see it as best to, allow them to move on.
So if they lose those kind of players, Dunkley and Wallace, they might get a little bit back in return. Are they then going to the draft?
They have to go to the draft, don't they? They have to now.
That's my question. What do the Bulldogs think they are right now?
Yeah.
Do they think are they rebuilding?
Yeah, no, they are. Luke Beveridge has spoken about it.
So they're rebuilding.
I'm not sure he's used that word, but he's spoken about how young they are on a number of occasions. And you look at the stats, they are young.
Which is just a bizarre situation considering the achievement that they did in 2016 with a pretty young list. And then after that young list, we're rebuilding with another young list 2 years later.
I expect it's several competing forces that have forced them into this situation right now.
And the fact that they have completely different front office staff, use the US sports term, your list manager's gone and things like that whole situation.
Dalrymple,
that can't have helped.
What about the Pies, though? You mentioned, are we giving them enough credit? It was, a really good tactical move from Nathan Buckley. Over the past couple of years is that he's been too stubborn with his tactics.
Yeah.
Jordan Ngoi, starring in recent weeks playing forward, did nothing in the first half against the Bulldogs, went into the middle, had three clearances, and really kick-started the Pies in that second half. I think it's another tick for Nathan Buckley that he's showing this flexibility in-game, and I think it's working.
Well, the cynic in me says about time, because it's taken him, seven or eight years to get to this position where he's actually showing some coaching flexibility in plan Bs and plan Cs.
Yep.
But the positive in me, and I think this is what it actually is, it shows that with some good players at his disposal, Buckley can coach. And I think Collingwood are a good team. How good remains to be seen, but they're around the mark. They're in that glut you speak about, aren't they, Max?
It's a similar situation to Melbourne in a way. A lot of that B tier is lifting. Because we've known they have those stars like Pendlebury and Treloar and Howe, who's been fantastic in defence for about 18 months now. And Phillips has been really, really good for them this year and stuff like that.
Incredible. Phillips is close to the most improved player in the competition with Jake Melksham, I think, almost.
Bottoms moving up another level.
So you mentioned those. There's a few All-Australian contenders. Brody Grundy and Max Gawn almost head-to-head, I think, at the moment for that All-Australian ruck. Jeremy Howe would have, I think, 1 foot into that defensive back line. And then the glut of midfielders, Pendlebury, Treloar, Sidebottom and Phillips. If there was a mid-year All-Australian squad, which will soon be happening on foxfooty.com.au, there's a real battle there to try and squeeze a lot of those Pies in.
I don't know who you pick as your ruckman in the All-Australian squad. I think there's probably four or five that would have a really, really good play for it. But Brody Grundy would be one of them. Jeremy Howe in defence. Let's not forget Jeremy Howe was traded to the club and was told, you will be playing forward.
Forward, yes.
And he wanted to be playing forward.
Yes.
And only out of necessity, in about round six or seven, was it last year or the
early
year before?
Stages, yep.
He went back. I know we wrote an article on it. He went back in defence, and he's been comfortable there ever since. More than ever, you need blokes who can take marks in defence.
Mm. Did you write that article, Tom?
A year or two ago,
Did you build it as well?
I would have built it, yes.
Back in the building days, looking forward to
And Pendlebury's just playing his role.
He is.
Yeah, no, I like Collingwood at the moment. I like North Melbourne and I like Collingwood. I like what they're doing.
And you know what? Fifth and sixth in the power rankings.
There we go.
And you know what the listeners love on the Fox Footy podcast?
What do they like?
Fair or Fast, Australia's favourite segment.
Boop, ba-doop, ba-doop.
That's the worst intro thing of all time.
Didn't get a chance to rehearse it.
Welcome to Fair or Fast. Max, I'll start with you.
Yes.
Geelong is a worse team than it was 12 months ago, even with Ablett. Fair or farce?
Oh, farce? I think they're a better team. They are playing the worst mixture possible right now of bad, ugly football.
Mm. I mean, bad, ugly, unconvincing football as well.
Yeah.
That's the bit that concerns.
It's hard to sell this football.
Geelong supporters, I think.
The absence of Menzel is bigger than we think.
I agree with that.
That's really important. Radigalea is a big out. I really like what he brought to the team, forward and ruck, really helping that situation with the rotating door of Stanley and Smith that we've talked about plenty of times on here. I think they're still a good team. They need to work some things out. They need to get some players back, but Gee, they're bad at the moment.
Did you
hear
you got a grab on 360 last night, Thomas?
Ooh. No.
Oh, they were playing the moment, Radigalia's very unfortunate leg break, and just your dulcet tones from the 3AW boundary line.
Oh, really?
Just, coming through, yes.
I did not know. I was down there.
Right on, Hodgie.
Well, he broke his leg, and the doctor went out to him, sprinted back, grabbed a green whistle, and sprinted back out with him. And as soon as they get the green whistle, you know he's in trouble. Yeah. Speaking of Radigalia, the footy show paid him to be on the show last Thursday. And you know where that money's going? Radigalia is sending it back to his auntie or his mum in Fiji to buy a washing machine.
That's awesome.
How great is that?
That is awesome.
Expensive washing machine.
He's a universally popular man, Radigalia. All the best to him.
Yes.
Ben.
Yes, Tom.
Fair or fast? The MRO is officially a lost cause.
Fast, not a lost cause.
Officially.
Do you like that? According to us.
Fast, but as the season goes on, you're hearing more commentators say, oh, gee, I like what Michael Christian did at the start, but I'm just not sure now. Like, that's becoming a more frequent line that we're seeing. Well, is there an incident that's really stood out to you from the weekend? Mason Cox, is that
no,
the one?
No, thanks or for Jake asking. Carlisle? No, Sam Menegola. Yes. It was farcical that he did not cop a suspension for this. Now, I would have copped 1 week for this because... So
explain what he did.
I was down on the boundary line at Simon, what do you call it?
Was it right in front of you?
Right in front of me.
Yes.
And... Rowe was on the ground and Menegola was on top of him, and Menegola put a knee, what looked to me to be a knee, into his head, and then then got up and put a shin into his head.
So worse than James Sicily's in round two?
Well, to me, the shin into the head was the secondary thing, and that's what the MRO addressed. But what about the elbow into the head? What gives you the right to, when someone's defenseless on the ground, to put an elbow or a forearm into someone's head? Now, the umpire didn't see it because he was on the other side, which is understandable. But fair dinkum, this deserved at least a week, and I couldn't believe that it didn't. This is what I hate in football more than anything is the gutless... the gutless cheap shot. Now, Rowe wasn't knocked out. He got up and played on. But this was completely unnecessary, and I think it sets a bad precedent.
Sort of a look of the game statement.
Yeah. Just sort of grubby. Yeah. It was really not even grubby and D-Day sort of situation, just grubby.
Yeah. A lot of people have been tweeting about it. How can you do this? And I think it's spot on. And I haven't really been a critic of the MRO this year. I think there's been some inconsistencies, but I've sort of held off. But I think Michael Christian's missed a big trick here.
Tom was showing us this in the office, the Fox Footy office, on Monday morning. I came over and saw it, and jokingly, as a biased Geelong fan, said, "Ah, no, it's fine. He gets off. Nothing happens."
Did you think he'd get a suspension?
Yes.
Yes, I thought he'd get a week or two.
Dirty.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
What on for overtaking your own fair or fast segment?
Sorry, here we go. Max, I'm going to fair or fast with you next. And it comes off Twitter, which is great. This is from Harrison Callahan on Twitter.
Thank you, Harrison.
And he's hashtagged fair or fast.
It's we are trending.
You know you've made it when you've hashtagged.
And he's used one of the great words in English language. The ubiquitous nature of sports betting and increasing power of gambling companies sets a dangerous environment for corruption in the AFL, i.e. situation fixing rather than match fixing, as seen on Al Jazeera's cricket documentary.
Not another cricket reference.
Well, I suppose disclaimers. Fox Footy has betting partners for the website.
Yes.
Do a weekly esports web show with a betting company as well.
But
no. Mm. I don't remember actually which position he said, but no, it's okay. Match fixing, I can't speak to the cricket element as well as you could, Tom, for example, as the cricket expert that you are, but in tennis, match fixing is rife at the lower levels because the money involved just makes sense. Mm. When you're getting nothing or just getting a basic living wage playing challenger-level events on the tennis tour, or if you're an umpire and getting very little, you can be influenced into match-fixing because you can bet on all these tiny events all around the world. They've cut down on footy events like this, like local footy match betting.
Yes.
They've cut down on that specifically because of this. Yeah. Whereas at AFL level, I understand that there's a prevalence of betting in and around the game, but I still don't think it's going to be an issue to that level because there's enough money in the game to prevent it.
Yeah, and it's very hard to fix a match of footy.
Yes.
Spot fixing is really what we're talking about here. And spot fixing, I can't imagine, is going to creep into AFL, but certainly in sports like tennis and cricket, where you have specific moments that can be fixed that don't actually make you lose the game. That's the problem.
Quick two-sentence take on the Al Jazeera documentary there, Thomas.
Elements of truth, where there's smoke, there's fire, but I wouldn't be worried if you're an Australian fan about the test team.
No, I think
there's a few holes in this.
I like that. Well played. Yep,
and I've done a bit of research this morning on that. Ben,
yes.
Fair or fast, the priority pick should be abolished, period.
No, that's a farce. I think there's still a place for it, and there's been a lot of mixed commentary about that, but I still think there's a place for the priority pick, particularly now that it's towards the latter end of the first round. I don't think Carlton should be getting one this year, though. I know, I very much respect our former colleague, Jake Nile, wrote a really nice, nicely put together piece on The Age. His argument, though, I wasn't 100% for those. So yeah. I think the priority pick is still there, but I don't think any team really should be getting a gig this year for the priority
picks.
No, I
would agree.
Certainly not as early in their rebuild as Carlton is. Yes. We have to remember where they are, actually. They're
when did Melbourne get their priority pick where they got Trengrove and Scully? Was it 09? It was 09, wasn't it?
Yep.
09. So that was 3 years in their rebuild, 07, 08, 09.
Year after Watts.
Yeah,
right.
But that would basket case that sport. Speaking of basket, Max, LeBron James is a greater basketball player than Michael Jordan was, fair or fast?
Yes.
Fair.
Oh, yes.
So there's two things here. You can compare their just records and finals made and all that stuff, but you have to just believe, based on how athletes have evolved and science has evolved, that players are better now than they were in the 90s.
So LeBron's opponents are more difficult than what Jordan's were?
Yeah, and LeBron is more skilled than Jordan was because he has the medical training, the background, the sports science surrounding everything. We know more. If you put a middle-tier basketball player in the NBA of 30 years ago, he's a star.
Yeah.
That's just how it is, because they know more about basketball.
But how do we know?
Well, we don't.
We don't.
But this is why I'm saying that he is, and my word is law, so there we go.
Okay, fair enough. No, very good. Ben.
Yes.
I've done a typo here. Yes. Fair or fast? Oh, bad games of football are more boring than they ever have been. Fair or fast?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair, Tom, because they're low scoring as well. And what is making it worse is that in play, the skills are probably worse because of the pressure as well. A lot of the state of the game stuff is down to the amount of defensive pressure that is being put on players at the moment. You can be as skilled as you possibly want, but because defensively players are so switched on at the moment, it is making in-game are hard to watch and probably unappetizing sometimes.
But I feel like even 20 years ago when I started watching footy, or 15 years ago, there would be bad games. There'd still be someone who kicks six or still a specky somewhere. Yes. But maybe this is my nostalgic memory.
It's probably a lot of it.
So what did you make then of Richmond St Kilda, which wasn't a great game on the
surface? No, I didn't see a lot of it.
So there was some bad turnovers. Maxie, I think you covered that one. Yes. So there was some bad turnovers. But at one end, you had Jade Gresham kicking six, and Josh Caddy, I think, kicked six at the other end.
Yes, so Nick Floston kicking three.
Yes, which was very much out of the blue. So that probably gave the crowd and the neutral viewer a reason to keep
It's about the neutral viewer, isn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't so much that they were dominating in the way that a big forward would have if they were kicking six or seven back when Tom was talking about, but it still was a reason to watch. I wrote about this on Monday. Footy is at its lowest scoring in 50 years.
Yes,
average per team per game is like 83 points, lowest since 1968 when it was 82. In the grand final that year, the score was like 58 to 53. Yeah. We don't want that in the grand final. Unless it's West Coast Sydney, I guess.
I'm really looking forward to the upcoming Under-18 Championships, particularly to see how the zones work. I haven't really watched it closely in previous years, but I think there'll be a lot of interest this year in particular in how these players go and how the rules work on a national broadcast. So there's zones where, so it's called an anti-density rule, where there's a certain amount of players that have to be in the forward 50 and in the defensive 50 at the same time. So when you go
at a stoppage.
At a stoppage, that's right. So if you go to an under-18s game live and then the next day go to an AFL game live, you will notice that the amount of players are spread out so much more at an under-18s game and in the TAC Cup as well compared to an AFL game. You'll go to an AFL game at the moment and there's all 36 players are seemingly within a 50-metre radius.
Yeah, in a phone box. Yes. The argument against those anti-density laws is that you then have key forwards coming to the AFL system not used to competing with a big pack. They're just competing with a mate next to them, like what they do in under-18s.
Yeah. So, and that's probably what the likes of Josh Shackey in particular, I think, has struggled with since coming.
It's a different
in.
Game.
Yes.
We got one more fair or
fast.
Only one more. This one I've just come off the top of my head.
Yes.
Max, fair or fast, and I'll go to Ben as well. Steve Hocking had the worst day of his administration career on Sunday when he got it wrong with the decision review system.
You're big on this, aren't you, Thomas?
He had probably the worst week.
Week?
Well, I mean, it was a series of days, you know, of those events of the match review stuff as well as the score review stuff.
Oh, the match review stuff.
Because the match reviews, it's under his purview as well.
Yeah, I'm talking about the score review on Sunday when he spoke on 3AW and said the decision was right that was made, and then on Monday it came out via foxfooty.com.au that it was wrong.
Yes. Do you think he was ill-informed when he said that on Sunday?
No, I don't think he was informed.
Right.
I don't think
he was ill-informed.
Well, that is ill-informed, isn't it? I don't think he was given...
He was not misinformed.
Correct. I don't think he was given wrong information. I think he was given minimal information. Yes. I'm speculating.
Yes.
And as a result, played a little bit of a guessing game. It came out a little bit clumsily, and that became a newspaper headline when he wouldn't have liked it to be. And then, I mean, good on him and good on the AFL. They've put the wrongs to right on Monday. But, geez, that was clearly wrong what happened there in the Richmond-St Kilda game. And I don't like the way that the decision review system has been brought into question over that. This was a human error. This was some woman or man sitting up in a box who just pressed the wrong button because they didn't look at the right replays and didn't assess the situation properly.
So what are we... The thing that's come out of this as well is that the umpire, the TV umpire, is not necessarily looking at the same footage as what the viewer is looking at home.
Can I explain it?
How does that work?
Yeah, so the TV... This is what Fox Footy told me yesterday. So the TV umpire has a TV in front of them, and they can split it into as many different compartments as they want. They can have two screens on the one thing that where the vision is lined up, or four or eight, or they can even have, I think, 16, and they can look at it all at one time. And then as they rule out particular angles that are irrelevant, they just touch them and they go.
Yep.
So that's what they look at. And the reason why the broadcast doesn't show that is because it would look ridiculous on the broadcast on a TV if you had four or eight different little compartments all over the screen.
Yep.
So the broadcast shows what it wants, and the TV umpire looks at what he or she wants. But the problem with this is it just lacks a little bit of integrity because you don't really know what they're looking at.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wish the broadcaster just took whatever the TV umpire was looking at.
Which happens in most of the sports.
Happens in cricket and tennis.
So. Yeah, certainly. So I don't see a reason. I understand that if you have eight and they've blocked out six possible angles and you've got six black boxes on screen, that wouldn't look great. That's the worst case scenario. These people making the decisions are more informed in TV production than I am, but I would like to think that it would not only inform the viewer to know exactly what the umpires are looking at, but be fine when we actually saw it on television.
I'm really interested in what Richmond have, the angle Richmond have taken here. They actually don't care if the decision is wrong or right. They just want it to be quick. They want the game to move on.
Yeah.
And I actually disagree with that. Get the decision right, but if you can't get it right, if it's not clear, go straight back to the umpire's call.
They just need to be quicker in those times when the decision is line ball and you're taking too much time to get it exactly right. In those cases, do umpires call.
There was an interesting last line in the press release last night
about
the Tigers, and that the AFL almost going out and making a point of it that it acknowledges that Richmond has probably had some bad calls when it comes to the review this year.
Well, and let's just put out there as well, I don't think we can get rid of the score review because it has... What did they say in the press release? 29 mistakes have been fixed because of the score review this year.
Yeah.
You don't want those 29 mistakes in the game. Mm. That's not worth having. Yeah. For all of this as a mess that it is, still keep it.
Yeah. I think it's still the main problem I have with it is the touch off the boot. But I'm willing to cop that a little bit because I think more correct than a wrong based on the score review system. Mm-hmm. I spoke to the Tigers last night, Ben and Max, and they reiterated that they just want it to be quick, whatever it is. Keep the momentum of the game going. And Paul Roux said that on the couch last night, the momentum of the game is crucial. I get that, but hey, so is a decision that could decide a grand final.
So we briefly touched on a very good episode of or segment of Fair or Fast there, Thomas.
Thank you. That was a long one.
We like that sting. So
Diddy Kong Racing sort of sting.
As we go to air or as we record the podcast, St Kilda has confirmed that Jake Carlisle will challenge his two-match suspension at the AFL Tribunal on Tuesday night. Alan Richardson hinted that the Saints were seriously pondering a challenge, and it looks like they might use a precedent of a round two suspension with Josh Caddy, who hit David McKay and knocked him out. But that was graded as medium impact, whereas the Carlisle hit to Jack Riott has been graded as high impact. Do we think that the Saints have got a pretty good case there in getting that downgraded and subsequently would get down from 2 weeks to 1 week?
I think they've got a good case.
Yep.
But without looking at the finer details, I think they've got a very good case. Mm. And it would allow Jake Carlisle to play against Sydney in 2 weeks' time. He'd miss the West Coast game this weekend regardless, but I think there's every reason for them to challenge Max.
Yep, my view when I saw it on Saturday was medium impact 1 week. Yep. So when it came in as high, I was a little bit surprised. I could understand it because they do the result-based judgments based rather than the process, which I don't like, but it's what they do.
Yes.
So high just seems a little bit much for me.
Just a couple of other MRO things. You already mentioned Sam Menegola. Mason Cox, was he lucky?
I'm actually torn on this. I think he was lucky. I don't like...
Is it a look thing again?
See, I would like to say the MRO has been consistent because was it Dalhouse that he hit in the head? Or Kayla, who was it? Who were the Bulldogs?
Johannesson, I think.
Whoever the Bulldogs player was.
Yes. Yeah.
Johannesson.
Yeah.
Got up and was fine to go. And I'd like to say, well, that means that he should get off because the impact wasn't sufficient enough to constitute a suspension. But any front-on bump to the head, needs to be viewed differently to a side-on bump to the head. This is quadriplegic sort of stuff.
Yeah.
That the front-on bump to the head is so dangerous. And it was clumsy, but he should know better, Max.
Yeah. No, I think
I know he's your really well. I know Mason Cox is your mate.
Not anymore. No, he unfollowed me. Not anymore.
Oh, I wasn't going to say that. But, so can I tell the story?
Yeah, please.
Mason Cox came into the office last week, last year, was it?
For photos, pre-season, yeah.
Yes. Pre-season photos.
Headshots.
Yep, headshots. The camera had to be up on a high tripod.
Yes.
And Max was sitting at his computer, and you were watching American sport. Or
it was college basketball.
College basketball, and Mason, being the American that he is, sat down and watched college basketball
American
with Max.
Pie?
Yeah. Yes. Watched basketball with Max, and they had a good discussion, and then they followed each other on Twitter, and then about 6 months later, Max was checking his Twitter and realised that Mason had unfollowed him.
It's disappointing day for Max.
He just didn't like my esports tweets,
oh,
no
my
interest.
God. Anyway, I think he was lucky here, but I'm as confused as anyone else, so I can't really make as firm a judgment as I could on Sam Menegola, which I thought was terrible.
Yes, no, I agree with that, Thomas. Let's, as we wrap up the Fox Footy podcast, let's go through the tips and the cups ahead of round 11.
These are catching on.
Yes.
Did you notice that Winston Abraham was at the Fremantle North game to present his own cup? I mean, not actually to present his own cup, but theoretically.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Mark of the year at Manuka Oval in about 98.
98, yes, not 99, because that was Matthew Laffin.
Kicking the ceremonial first goal, real Jed Bartlett, first pitch
style. First pitch, Monty Byrne sort of pitch.
Winston be Winston. Sydney Swans v Carlton on Friday night. This is going to be a blockbuster on Channel 504 for the Jason Saddington Cup.
The less spoken about this, the better. Sydney. Move on, Ben.
Western Bulldogs and Melbourne in the Daniel Cross Cup. And Daniel Cross was mentioned on the couch last night by Paul Roos, saying how he set the tone from a cultural perspective for the Demon Surge in 2018.
It's good. Well, Daniel Cross was a big part of that, was it 09 and 010 prelim final teams at the Western Bulldogs.
Absolutely.
Speak very highly of him there.
Yes.
Look, I think Melbourne win this, but Melbourne win this.
Melbourne wins by a good 6-7 goals at least.
Could have also gone Stephen Powell, who also played for St Kilda.
Yes, that's very much true, Thomas. Hawthorne and Port Adelaide down in Launceston for the Nathan Loney Cup.
The uncle of Jack Loney and brother of Ryan. It's actually true. Yes.
I believe you, but why?
Well, because that's
actually correct.
Because they're related.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Hawthorn wins this one, Ben and Tassie.
Right. This is a huge game for both clubs because both of them have been hard to read, whether they're contenders or not. So this is a big opportunity for either club to make a statement.
Yeah, if you believe in momentum, Port's bye came at a really bad time.
Yes.
But winning the showdown and then beating Gold Coast reasonably comfortably in Shanghai. I think Port's finally getting up the ladder, finally getting to that team we expected them to be. I think Port wins this.
Gold Coast and Geelong for the Nathan Ablett Cup, Thomas.
Could have gone Gary, but that was too soon.
Could have gone Gary, all too soon. Zach Smith or even Josh Caddy as well.
I sense something for the Gold Coast here. Geelong are
the
not
homecoming?
Playing. Yeah, Geelong aren't playing good footy. They're back at Metricon. Tom Lynch is back. I just feel like the planets are aligning. I'm going to tip Gold Coast.
Well, they beat the Cats in the corresponding game last year, Matthew.
Yes, they did. Can both teams
a week
lose?
Off.
Yeah. Can they both not get 4 points? Is that possible?
Is Geelong playing that bad?
They barely beat Carlton at home.
That was a bad game.
Yeah, it was.
4 goals in the first 5 minutes and barely any for the rest. Yes. Little stat for you. Question for you both off the cuff.
Yes.
Who has the greatest drop-off in champion data player ratings for 2018? Which player?
Ooh.
Joe Danaher.
No.
So it's after Gold Coast and Geelong, so I'm thinking of a Geelong player. It's not Joel Selwood, is it?
It's Gary Ablett.
It is Gaz, right.
Okay. I watched him play, and he's picking up a bit of the ball. I don't like the way the narrative has shifted for Gary Ablett. He comes to the club, I want to play midfield, I want to be a central player in this team.
I want to play every game
and play in the centre. He's a bit part performer at the moment. Yeah. He might be playing like
a 34-year-old AFL
player.
Well,
he is, and that's fine, but he should be playing more forward. Mm. Play him forward. Let him kick 2 or 3 goals a game and get 15 to 20 touches. Change his role.
And we saw if he's playing that role, then Danger can go back in the midfield, and we saw him having some really good moments against Carlton on Saturday night.
Essendon and Richmond in Dreamtime at the G for the Justin Blumfield Cup.
It's all to celebrate you, Tom. Thank you, sir. Dreamtime with Tom. Dreamtime at the G.
Yeah, don't dream about me. Richmond. Max, Essendon won't win 3 in a row.
Yeah,
not against
no,
the reigning premiers.
No, not against
Well, Richmond are due, aren't they? I think.
That's Stuart. They lost to West Coast a couple of weeks ago, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Play on.
I've said it before. Yes. They'll lose one game at the MCG all year.
You reckon this is the one?
No.
No, okay. Thank you, Max,
for building that up. Now, there is a plethora of players for West Coast and St.
You've got
Kilda.
This, you've got this wrong on the sheet here, Ben.
Why?
It's West Coast and St. Kilda. It's not Bo Wilkes. It's Bo Maester.
Yes, so it's Bo Wilkes slash Maester.
Oh, sorry,
Cup.
Yes.
The Bo Wilkes slash Bo Maester Cup. But also Michael Gardner, a great servant. Fraser Gehrig, David Sirikowski, and Jason Heatley for those probably more Gen X kind of operators.
Bo Maester retired from St. Kilda Footy Club when I was working there. And he told the players one morning, and he picked up his stuff, and he walked straight out. That was it. It was as nonchalant as any. Oh, Bo Maester's retired. Oh, which is, we better put something on the website. It happened out of nowhere. We heard a round of applause, and then the car sped off, and that was it.
And all the very best.
Off on his way to Perth.
Who wins?
Again.
West Coast by 1,000.
No, West
now,
Coast.
Was it you who said last week, what was the biggest ever winning margin be in doubt for Richmond v St.
Kilda? That was me. I'm going to keep predicting that against St. Kilda until it comes true. Is that the toughest fortnight you could possibly fixture a team to have right now? Richmond at the G and then West Coast at Optus.
And they also had Fremantle at Optus Stadium the week before that. As well.
Two trips to Perth in 3 weeks for a team that's playing bad footy anyway.
With Richmond in the middle.
How about that meat and the sandwich?
Oh. St Kilda's been okay the last few weeks. They were ahead of Richmond in the third quarter on Saturday, but they're having no chance to improve with this fixture.
Really like Jason Heatley. I think he was our coach at Northcote Park in the Northern Footy League.
Is that
the name of the club?
No, he's a great Northern Football League.
And kicked a lot of goals at full forward in 97.
He might have also coached East Berwyn in the Eastern Football League as well.
Alan Richardson's club.
Yes, that's right.
Anyway, go on.
North Melbourne and the Brisbane Lions for the Ben Robbins Daniel Pratt Cup.
Daniel Pratt's a good one from you.
Just the one season at Brisbane. Made his name at North Melbourne, though.
Yeah, a very big name. Yes. Not because Richard. North Melbourne win this. Richard Pratt. Yeah. Or Bob.
North Melbourne.
Or Spoilt.
Yeah. Brisbane's all right. North's better. So North will win.
Who's Jennifer Pratt?
I'm not sure, Tom, where you're going with that.
Yeah. You're really all the
Pratt. You've worked that quite well. Yeah. Now, we have got a contributor from Twitter for the Collingwood v Fremantle Cup, which is being dubbed from Gregory Holder off Twitter,
Holds,
the Chris Tarrant Charity Shield for Collingwood and Fremantle.
Why is it a charity? Where does the money go to?
It's the start of the season. It's
Tarrant's gym membership.
It's the FA Cup winner into the Premier League winner.
Ah.
Maybe the Rat Pack Fund with Chris Tarrant being involved.
Collingwood
in
win this.
What a weird game to have on Sunday afternoon at the G. Collingwood Fremantle.
Yes.
Collingwood does win, though.
Did Brodie Holland play at Fremantle and Collingwood as well? No, Paul Medhurst.
Whose sister, I believe, is a very good...
Natalie Medhurst?
Is she an AFLW player? She's a netballer.
She's West Coast Fever, I believe.
Apologies, go on.
And then Adelaide and GWS for the Kirtley Hampton Cup. I'm not sure if Kirtley will be playing on the weekend.
He's 3 in the Sandful.
So hopefully he gets a game to play against his old side. But gosh, this... If the Crows coming off a stinging loss, it could get ugly for the Giants.
Can we call it? Is this the Injury Cup?
Yes, probably it is.
Yeah. This is basically Sandful v Neefle at this point.
There's actually a lot of games this weekend that, on the face of it, you should be able to tip pretty easily.
Yeah,
we know it doesn't work out like that, but the Adelaide should win this quite easily. And the Giants, as I said before, are in disarray.
Can you apply the rebound effect, Tom, to any of these games?
It's a guideline. The rebound guideline. It's just in. Well, I need to remember. No, I can't off the top of my head. No.
Yeah, that's okay.
But I'm sure there is. Well, Adelaide.
Adelaide GWS.
Well, it doesn't count because GWS didn't win last week.
Yeah,
North Melbourne, Brisbane. Brisbane lost. Who did Brisbane lose to?
Brisbane lost to Sydney.
Valley lost.
And North Melbourne not great against Fremantle.
This could be the case.
North Melbourne, you reckon the Lions?
Gold Coast Geelong is the rebound game this week. You've even tipped Gold Coast.
In fact, Gold Coast had a bye, and before that, the rebound guideline is yet to be inundated with any bye stipulations, so we don't know what's going to happen after a bye. But the guideline would suggest that Gold Coast will beat Geelong this week. In fact, I'm willing to bet a can of Coke on it, Max.
Are we double or nothing?
We're double or nothing.
Okay.
Coke zero.
I agree.
So between now and the next Fox 40 podcast, we'll work out the bet for the Coke Zeros, and we'll work out the bye stipulations and the rebound effect.
We don't know. It's just it's an open can of worms.
We'll work that out.
Open can of Coke.
Great work from you, gentlemen. And make sure you keep clicking back, of course, to foxfooty.com.au.